The first speaker is Karditi Opp from University of Leipzig, University of Washington. The title of the speech is MI and Micro-Macro Modeling.
So the social sciences, and these are, among others, economics, political science, and sociology, consist of two kinds of propositions. There are hypotheses about collectives. These are families, organizations, societies, and so on. And these are hypotheses about the macro level. And hypotheses about individual actors, that is, about the micro level. Accordingly, there is, for example, a micro-sociology and a macro-sociology. And you see a microeconomics and macroeconomics. It is often held that there are no relationships between these different levels. This claim is rejected by methodological individualism. This is a research program, as we know, which is aimed at explaining macro-level propositions by referring to properties of individual actors. I will discuss this research program in this presentation. The contents are as follows. I start with the basic ideas and the structure of micro-macro explanations. So I say micro-macro explanations. Some scholars say macro-micro explanation. Both have the same meaning. I will then talk about the logical structure of micro-macro explanations, and I will give you an example for a micro-macro explanation, namely the impact of repression on political protest. Then, question, why is methodological individualism a fruitful research program? And finally, something as a conclusion. The basic ideas. The thesis that there are no relationships between micro and macro propositions is highly implausible. Let me illustrate this with an assumption. The high inequality of a specific society has brought about a high extent of mass political violence in this society. Look at the meaning of these concepts. Do they refer to individual actors? Inequality refers to properties of individuals, namely the distribution of the wealth or income of individuals. Inequality is normally measured by the statistical variance of incomes and wealth and the Gini coefficients. They refer clearly to individuals. Mass political violence, rate of or proportion of individual violence in a society, clearly referring to individual actors. It thus seems that macro concepts refer to individual properties. Now let's turn to explanation. How can the relation between inequality and mass political violence be explained by reference to individuals? Why does inequality and mass political violence co-vary? A plausible answer is this. Inequality affects individual motivations to protest, which influence the behavior of individuals. Inequality in a society could violate certain goals of individuals, and individuals could believe that their violent protest will change the situation. These motivations might bring about individual collective action, which aggregates to collective violent behavior. There is thus some connection between the macro and the micro level. What exactly does this connection look like? You see here the four variables I just mentioned: inequality, mass political violence on the macro level, and you have the variables on the individual levels. Goals and beliefs on the one hand as independent variables and individual behavior. How are these variables related? First of all, as I said, inequality has a causal effect on goals and beliefs. For example, that society is highly unequal will go against your goals to have an egalitarian society. Furthermore, goals and beliefs are causes for individual behavior. And here you have an aggregation, simply an analytical or logical relationship. And what about inequality and mass political violence? Here you have a correlation, a covariation. And as you said before, this is not a causal effect. It's an indirect causal effect. Namely, inequality has an effect via the individual level. There are thus three kinds of statements. You have the macro propositions. You have macro to micro or micro to micro. Macro to micro and micro to macro relations, and these are called bridge assumptions. They bridge the two levels, and you have the micro foundation in the sense of a micro proposition. Let us now look at these statements in more detail. What about the micro foundation? In the example, this is a singular causal statement. In a specific situation, goals and so on lead to behavior. Now, how can this be justified? Goals and beliefs are relevant due to a social psychological theory, namely value expectancy or subjective expected utility theory, and these are versions of rational choice theory. Many adherents of MI apply this theory. I discuss the question of which theory is most acceptable in the article. I will not address it here for limitations of time. My conclusion in the article is that at present this is the best theory available. I may add one word. In this article I also show that there are different versions, so there is not the theory of rational choice. But I will not go into this now. It is important to note the following. If singular causal statements are asserted, a theory must be applied that justifies the relations between the variables. Without applying a theory, the singular causal statements are ad hoc. You just say A leads to B without knowing why this is correct, and in order to justify it, you need some general proposition, some general statement, and this is the theory. Second, MI is open to the kind of valid theory on the micro level. So you need not apply rational choice theory. If one of us invents an ingenious theory, which is much better than rational choice theory, then this theory can be applied. And finally, there is no analytical relation on the micro level. If you want to explain something, you need an empirical proposition and not an analytical proposition. Now, let's turn to the macro to micro relations. In the example, there is a singular causal statement referring to a specific society. In order to avoid, again, ad hoc explanations, we need a theory to validate the singular statement. Could there be macro to micro laws? I do not know of any general inquiry about possible macro to micro laws, so I guess that there are not such macro to micro laws. Could there be analytical relations? Yes, an example is Olson's measurement of individual influence. This is a micro level. That means the extent to which you think you are influential in politics. So individual influence is a micro value. And this has an effect on the action to provide a public good, and this is also an individual variable. So, and the measurement is the following. Individual influence is equal to one, so one individual, divided by group size. So this is an analytical statement. And an example is in a group of 1,000 members, the influence of a single individual is 1 divided by 1,000. So if there are 1,000,000, then the influence is 1 divided by 1,000,000. So the influence is smaller than in a relatively small group. This is the definition by Olson. You see, you have also analytical relations between the macro and the micro level. Let's turn to the micro to macro relations. There could be singular causal statements. An example is the following. In a specific society, the number of protesters lead to government concessions. This is an empirical proposition. And again, how do you know that? You need a theory to validate this proposition. Could there be micro to macro laws? Again, I do not know any of these laws, and my guess is there are no such laws. There are often analytical relations, as we saw in the example. These are simple aggregations. Mass political violence is an analytical function of the number of individuals who behave violently. The macro propositions. In the example, the macro proposition is again a singular statement, namely a singular covariance statement. It has, as I said, an indirect causal effect via the microlevel. And in the literature, the macro proposition is often regarded as a direct causal effect. So macro sociologists or macro political scientists simply say A, always A is a cause of B. But if you formulate a micro-macro model, you see that this is not a causal effect. It's not a law either. It's simply a correlation. Could there be macro laws? There could be only macro laws as a component of a micro-macro model. In the example, the statement inequality correlates positively with mass political violence is a law if the conditions formulated in the micro-macro model are given. Note that there is no analytical relation. The aim is empirical explanation, and for that purpose you need an empirical proposition. What is the structure of a micro-macro explanation? A micro-macro model is an axiomatic system. The macro proposition is explained by, and that means derived from, statements about bridge assumptions and the micro theory. So you see, I wrote this axiomatic system in a more explicit form, and on the right you see the formalization. So micro theory and bridge assumptions are the axioms, and you see here the micro series incentives lead to behavior, then bridge assumption one, inequality leads to incentives, bridge assumption two, behavior leads to a collective action, and you see the micro proposition, inequality is related to collective action. So if you rewrite these statements in a little in the following way, namely axioms NE to INS to behavior to CA, you see immediately that inequality leads to CA can be is the inference. This is a simple causal. A leads to B, B leads to C, then A leads to C. So you see here that the macro-micro explanations are actually axiomatic systems. There are now numerous examples from the literature for micro-macro explanations. For example, about collective action, such as explaining revolutions, diffusion of innovations, origins and effects of norms and institutions, and agent-based modeling. I will present an example from the theory of collective action, also to show how fruitful micro-macro explanations are. And my example is the impact of repression on protest behavior. In the literature, you have different findings. One common finding is this. Look at this coordinate system. The x-axis is the extent of state repression. The y-axis is the extent of collective political action. So what you find often is a negative line, a line with a negative slope, and that means the higher state expression, the lower is political action. That means this is a deterrent effect. But this is not the only result. Another result is the following, namely that if repression increases, then political action increases as well. So you have a radicalization effect. That happens often also in protests now. You see that if there is increased repression, people protest more. And a third finding is the so-called inverted U-curve. And that means the following. If repression is low and increases, then first protest increases up to a certain point. And then if repression is relatively high, then protest decreases. So you have three different macro propositions. How can it be explained under which conditions which effect occurs? Repression and collective action are macro properties. Collective action is an aggregation of individual actions, as has been seen before. Regarding repression, one could argue in the following way. If repression is related to collective action, then repression could influence the motivations, and that means the incentives of individuals to protest. And these individual protests aggregate to collective protests. So this could be the argument. And in other words, you see here, again, the micro-macro model Namely, you see, repression has an impact, a causal impact, on individual incentives to protest. So repression changes the individual motivations to protest. And these individual incentives for protest have an effect on protest behavior, which then aggregates to collective protest. And there follows that there is a correlation between repression and collective action, collective protest. So if you hypothesis this argument, then it's not enough just to have some fantasies, but you need empirical research. And one research or one type of research is to find what the incentives of individuals are to protest. So why do people protest? And there is a lot of empirical research, and the major results can be summarized in the following way. So first of all, protest is relatively likely if there is high political discontent. But discontent is not the only variable. So often discontented people don't protest. Discontent and perceived personal influence must come together. So if there is an interaction effect of discontent and protest, this has an effect on the amount of protest. Then often social networks play a major role. That means if there are encouragement of your friends, that has an impact on protest. Social costs, often depending on your networks, your protest is rejected by friends. And also the perceived likelihood and severity of repression is a social cost. So, and the final incentive is a protest norm, or often called civic duty, perceived civic duty. That means people get internal benefits and costs from following or not following internal norms to protest. So we did a lot of research, and often people say, in this situation, I felt I had to protest. So there is a protest norm, which is an incentive, according to a wide racial choice model, to participate in protest. You can imagine now how you could perhaps with this model explain the violent actions in the last few days in France, but I will not go into this here. But you may consider this. So now let's see how repression is exactly related to the incentives. And the hypothesis could be as follows. Now assume extent of repression is low and protest increases. What could happen? First of all, an increase of political discontent and influence could originate. Secondly, an increase of social rewards. So your friend in positive networks encourage you. They are frustrated as well and said, now we have to protest. Then decrease of the cost of protest, of repression. There is safety in numbers. If people think many others will protest, then it is unlikely that you get hurt by the police. So there is a decrease of the cost for repression if there is a radicalization effect. And in this situation, there is an activation of a protest norm. So norms hold under certain conditions. Then, now assume protest, state repression further increases, and there is a deterrence effect. What happens? Now, what should happen is that the incentives decrease. There will certainly be an increase in political discontent because more repression is still more illegitimate than it was before. And here now, you get a decrease in social rewards. Your friends will not ask you to protest if that hurts you, if you get injured. Then an increase of the cost of repression. People will think that not that the masses that protested before will be there. So the likelihood that you are hurt are higher. And there is no activation of protest norm. Protest norms are conditional. That means the condition is not that you have to protest if you may die, if you may be killed. So you see here, the incentives behave differently if there is a radicalization and if there is a deterrence effect. Another factor is there may be different pre-existing incentives before there is repression. That means the strength of an internalized protest norms may be very strong. If you read interviews by protesters, you often find that they say, I had such a feeling of a duty to do something that I had to go there, even if it's dangerous. And others don't have internalized this norm. So this was rather ad hoc, what I just told. And what we now have to do is, how can we justify, how can we validate this? And I sketch now the theoretical foundation, how theories could be applied. So, but this is only a sketch. You had to formulate this in a more precise way if you publish this. So the micro foundation, what I applied implicitly, is a wide racial choice model. That means norms, encouragement, and so on. These are incentives. So furthermore, macro to micro assumptions, I assume that government reactions are perceived. Immediate exposure is likely to be perceived correctly. So, and this is a cost, and people act according to the cost. Social reward, you may explain the behavior of your friends. This is a behavior, and this is also dependent on costs and benefits. So it will be highly costly for you if you tell him to go to a demonstration and get killed. And activation of protest norm is also a hypothesis that a norm that holds under certain conditions is an incentive to lead to action. Micro to macro assumption simply is an analytical aggregation. These assumptions should be spelled out, as I said, in more detail in a publication about repression and protest. Next point, why are micro-macro explanations a fruitful procedure? The main arguments in favor of micro-macro explanations or micro-macro modeling are as follows. They lead to new knowledge about causal processes that bring about certain macro phenomena or explain certain macro propositions. And I think the example I brought illustrates this very well. Furthermore, micro-macro explanations lead to the discovery of conditions for the validity of macro propositions. So we had these three macro propositions. Yeah, when does which proposition hold? And the micro-macro explanation shows you exactly the conditions when that is true. Then furthermore, macro-micro explanations, you apply micro theories here, and these are new tests of micro theories. You apply the micro theory. If the micro theory is wrong, the whole explanation is wrong. So a micro-macro explanation involves a new test of micro theories. Now, everything in the social sciences is controversial, and micro-macro modeling is controversial as well. And there is one relatively new philosophy of science. This is critical realism. And they strongly reject micro-macro explanations, but I have not time to go into the details here. There's an excellent article by Diorio and Leon Medina from 2022, Analytical Sociology and Critical Realism in the Research Handbook on Analytical Sociology, edited by Manso. So I come to the conclusion, the basic claim of of MI is that macro propositions can and should be explained by properties of individual actors and bridge assumptions. So the bridge assumptions are important. It's not just properties by individuals. And MI analyzes what such micro-macro explanations look like. Due to the merits of micro-macro analysis, they are now widely used in the social sciences. However, many existing micro-macro explanations do not spell out in detail what the assumptions are their arguments are based upon. For example, very often singular causal statements are used without specifying the relevant theories. There is thus room for improvements in specific social science work. So, and this is my final point.